Good morning. Here's the NBC News from around the world. This is James Stevenson in the NBC Newsroom in New York. And this morning, we're going to hear from NBC observers right where the big things are going on, in the Pacific and the Western Front. General MacArthur's tanks and infantry, which landed on Luzon, the main Philippine island, yesterday, are reported well-established in their positions and rolling south along the West Coast flatlands. The march back to Manila, Bataan, and Corregidor is now on. In the European theater of war, Allied positions are the most favorable since the German counterattack of several weeks ago. Only one supply road now remains available to Nazi troops in the forward area of the Belgium Bulge, and this is in danger of being cut from the south. Thousands of Germans are facing entrapment. In Hungary, Russian troops have succeeded in occupying over half of Budapest, while other Red Army units are moving toward the Austrian border in a drive headed for Vienna. German attempts to relieve pressure on the trapped Nazis in Budapest have failed, as all counterattacks from the northwest have been smashed back. And in Washington, Congress officially goes to work today on the job of forcing hundreds of thousands of 4Fs into war work and thousands of women into the Army Nursing Corps. And now a few words from your announcer.
You know, the one thing our fighting men want above everything else is mail from home. They want to hear from their families as frequently as possible. Now, the way to make sure that your letters reach your fighting man is to use V-mail. V-mail flies to its destination as tiny bits of film, then is blown up again and placed in the hands of your fighting man just as soon as possible. By using V-mail, you can write short, newsy letters often instead of just one long letter occasionally. And every time you write, you will know that your letter is flying to its destination. Get the V-mail habit. Write often. It's your way of making a vital contribution to the war effort. And now here is James Stevenson in the World News Roundup.
The war in the Philippines has now reached the beginning of its climax as American forces start their sweep toward Manila, Bataan, and Corregidor. The Japanese challenge has been accepted, and the issue will soon be joined in a major battle leading to a final settlement. The amazing thing about General MacArthur's landing on the beaches of Lingayen Gulf is the fact that the Japanese were prepared for it, and yet American troops and tanks went ashore with comparative ease. For several days, the Japanese radio has been reporting great numbers of American ships in the vicinity of Lingayen Gulf. And yesterday, the Japs claimed that attempts to land had been beaten off. General Yamashita was quoted as saying that he was prepared to give General MacArthur a hot reception. But despite Japanese preparations for the attack, American forces took the beaches and rolled inland with but little opposition. The initial successes do not mean that the march south will be a victory parade to Manila. Jap troops are probably deployed in positions of vantage and will offer furious resistance in suicide defense of their last hold on the Philippines. Yamashita and the Japanese warlords have declared that the war for Japan would be fought on the Philippines, so that whatever the reason for their failure to prevent the American invasion of Luzon, it is to be expected that they will fight to the last man before the final liberation of the Philippine Islands. And now that the issue is joined and the big fight is soon to begin, it becomes not only a battle between nations, but also a contest between two individuals, Yamashita, the champion of the Japanese military system, and MacArthur, representing the best traditions of American military strategy. Yamashita has bragged and boasted of the many terrible things he would do to MacArthur. He has rattled his saber and shouted his defiance while inviting MacArthur to come on and fight. The Japanese people have been regaled with stories of Yamashita's invincibility, and they have laughed at jokes poked at MacArthur, the man, they said, who had run away. And now it remains to be seen whether Yamashita can make good his boasts. He's on the spot with the Japanese nation. If he fails, there is only one out for him, the sharp point of his saber, which he has rattled so loudly in the past, that same saber which he planned to hold over MacArthur's head. Unless he violates the code of Shinto, he will plunge his saber into his vitals and join his many predecessors in the Japanese face-saving hereafter. He will save face and lose his life, which, after all, is a very healthy thing for a peace-loving world. And General MacArthur, the man who the Japanese said had run away, is back. He is girded for war and ready for the big fight. He has accepted the Japanese challenge. He has a score to settle with Yamashita, and the time is fast approaching for the climax. The day of reckoning is almost here. It will be a great day for MacArthur. And the great mass of Filipinos is rejoicing, for their friends and brothers have returned to Luzon to liberate them from the hated Jap. They will not stand idly by. They will join in the fight. They will come down from the hills and out of the mountains to end their 3 long years of slavery. And now we're ready for a report directly from the Philippines. And for that, we go by shortwave to NBC in the Pacific.
This is Pat Flaherty speaking from Lingayen Gulf in the Philippines. American troops are on the island of Luzon in the Philippines. It's another miracle of United States military organization, another great naval feat, another gallant landing by the Army. Vice Admiral Thomas E. Kingfield, 7th United States Fleet, has once again brought its power to bear against the Japs on the sea and in the air to put ashore the troops of the American 6th Army under command of Lieutenant General Walter Kruger. I traveled in this huge Luzon convoy of more than 600 ships aboard the flagship of Admiral Kincaid. Hence, I saw the 7th Fleet amphibious forces deliver this assault group onto the Lingayen Gulf beachhead at 9:30 yesterday morning. The entire operation was conducted by a master timetable. Despite the vaunted Jap sea and air power, the convoy maintained a perfect schedule, a schedule which was measured in men, miles, and minutes. From the flag bridge, I had a commanding view of the troops clambering down the network of rope ladders from the transport into the small landing craft waiting alongside. Each group of small boats would circle like a flock of ducks or geese until all was ready. Then they would move toward the beaches in a flying wedge formation. A few Jap planes appeared high overhead. A curtain of anti-aircraft fire went up to meet them. One Nip was directly over our ship. He had ideas, but he turned away as the Akash spread toward him. But as he turned, he ran smashed into the bursting fire of a carrier-based Navy Wildcat, and the Nip went down in flames. General Walter Kruger is returning to Luzon, where he served as a private, a corporal, and a sergeant in the United States Regular Army from 1899 to 1901. The general will celebrate his 64th birthday on January 26th. It won't be the easiest thing to do, but his troops will be fighting to give him Manila, 100 miles away, as a birthday present. Pat Flaherty speaking from Lingayen Gulf in the Philippines and returning to NBC in New York.
We take you now by shortwave to NBC in London.
This is John McVane in London. Weather at the front is still bad. Ice, snow drifts, and blizzards are making the battle a bitter, slogging, painful advance. The British at the tip of the salient have taken four villages in an advance of about 2 miles. The Americans are still around and in the outskirts of La Roche. This advance has threatened the German position south of Marche, and the Germans are said to be withdrawing on an 8 to 10 mile front. Behind them, they're leaving mines and booby traps in the snow. British scientists are reported to have been holding a series of secret conferences on new methods of dealing with the German V-2 rockets. As you know, these rockets have been fired against southern England. They carry something over a ton of high explosive, and they hit the ground at 1,000 miles an hour. The London Daily Mail today reports the V-2 isn't controlled by radio, but it does carry some type of radio transmitter. Presumably, this sends out automatic signals some time after the rocket takes the air, so the Germans can get a rough idea of how the rocket is heading on its way down. So far, the only means of dealing with the V-2 are bombing and gunning the launching sites and the supplies, but these are difficult to find. The present planes and anti-aircraft guns can do nothing against a projectile traveling through the stratosphere at such high speed. The only certain method at the moment of dealing with the V-2s would be to drive the Germans out of Holland. Their present range means that to hit southern England, the rockets must be launched from Holland. But Professor A.M. Lowe, one of Britain's rocket experts, indicates a possible method of dealing with V-2 when he says the complicated rocket apparatus depends on varying densities of air to function. He points out that to a body moving at 1,000 miles an hour and upward, slight resistance has an enormous effect. And he indicates there are several methods of creating local pressure or disturbances in the path of the rocket, presumably to explode it or put it out of line before it hits the ground. As for the effect of this V-bomb fire against southern England, a correspondent writing to the Daily Mail shows plainly the temper of the British. The letter says, Let us erase the German towns that would not in the ordinary way receive a bomb. Make a start with a first list of 100, wiping out each one completely. We in the south of England, who have to sit, wait, and take it, want the German population invited to the feast of indiscriminate bombing. And wish, too, that if they should escape death, at least they should be left homeless. And the correspondent ends with the words, "We have had something that makes you think." This is John McBain in London, sending you to the NBC newsroom in Washington.
This is Leif Eid in Washington. And this morning, now that MacArthur stormed ashore in Luzon, one of the main reasons for Washington shouting about manpower and tremendous war production is obvious. In spite of defeat in Europe, the Army and Navy are charging ahead with their Pacific campaign on schedule. Or it may be even ahead of schedule. For the home front, the war has reached a stage of supporting two enormous campaigns at the same time, and opposite sides of the world. So today, Representative Andy May's House Military Committee listens in turn to spokesmen for the Army, the Navy, the War Production Board, and Selective Service. Then, in 2 or 3 days at the most, says May, the committee will have written its new work or fight bill, aimed at forcing deferred draft-age men into war factories. And as soon as they're through with that, the committee men will turn to writing a bill for drafting registered nurses. Both are threats. One tells the deferred man that he'll be doing KP or digging ditches or policing barracks without hope of GI benefits if he doesn't hop into overalls. That is, if he isn't working at an essential job already and stays there. The nurses' bill will provide for drafting nurses as privates, but it'll keep voluntary enlistments open, with nurses going in as second lieutenants. Now, as I reported yesterday, these two bills are about as far as Congress will go now. The Hill will wait and see if they don't turn the trick before it considers full-scale compulsory national service. Otherwise, President Roosevelt has told Democratic biggies on the Hill that he goes into the next Big Three conference with hands free. And WPB defends itself against the sharp criticism on the diaper shortage. Says WPB, "We're making more three-cornered pants now than we did before the war. The trouble is, too many new customers." Eid in Washington, returning you now to New York.
And this morning, we heard from NBC observers Pat Flaherty speaking from Lingayen Gulf in the Philippines, John McVain in London, and Leif Eid in Washington. Now here's your announcer, and then I'll be back with more news.
It's 3,000 miles across America, and across this 3,000 miles, vital war business is being transacted. Troops are in transit. Men of the armed forces are being moved from one camp to another. Many are going home on their last furloughs before going overseas. Civilians engaged in war production are making trips vital to the war effort. It all adds up to this. There's absolutely no room for unnecessary civilian travel. Don't travel. Don't take a trip for pleasure. If you do, you may be seriously interfering with our war production, or keep a serviceman from visiting his family for the last time before setting out for the battlefront. As a matter of fact, you won't find much pleasure in traveling these days. It's anything but pleasure. However, put the interest of your country and its fighting men first. Unless it's absolutely necessary, don't travel. And again, here is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom.
On the Italian battle lines, the Germans have dug in for a stand at the extreme eastern end of the front. Severe winter weather is keeping activity on the entire front restricted to patrols. At Chongqing, Minister of Information Wang Shi-che told a press conference today that the Japanese are applying strong pressure to Chinese forces near the East China coast in obvious anticipation of attacks by the Allies. Wang said China had received news of General MacArthur's landing on Luzon with enthusiasm. The Voice of Freedom, which has not broadcast from Luzon since the fall of Corregidor, came back on the air today. The broadcast, monitored by the Federal Communications Commission, repeated General MacArthur's first communique on the Luzon invasion. The Voice of Freedom's last Luzon broadcast to the American public came from Corregidor a few hours before the Japanese took over. And that's the morning's news from around the world. This is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom in New York saying goodbye, and I'll be seeing you tomorrow morning.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.